Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, chapter 19, entitled The Island of Jambavik, text number 26.
Yai Shadaya Parisi Bhagaso Hari.
Yai Shadaya Parisi Bhagaso Hari.
Niruktamistam Biri Mantra Vastutaha.
Niruktamistam Biri Mantra Vastutaha.
Eka pritanna ma viravuto muda.
Eka pritanna viravuto muda.
Grinati purna swayamashisham prabhu.
Grinati purna swayamashisham prabhu.
Yai. By whom?
By whom?
The inhabitants of Bharatvarsha.
The inhabitants of Bharatvarsha.
Shadaya.
Shadaya.
Faith and confidence.
Faith and confidence.
Vahisi.
Vahisi.
In the performance of Vedic ritualistic sacrifices. Bhagasaha. By the vision. Havi. Oblations. Niruktam.
Offered.
Istam. To the desired deity.
Vidhi.
By the proper method.
Mantra.
By reciting mantras.
Vastutaha.
With the proper ingredients.
Ekaha.
That one supreme personality of Godhead.
Pritak.
Separate.
Namabhi.
By names.
Ahutaha,
cold.
Muda,
with great happiness.
Grinati,
he accepts.
Unaha,
the Supreme Lord who is full in himself.
Swayam,
personally.
Ashisam,
of all benedictions.
Prabhu,
Bestower.
Bestower.
Translation. In India, Bharatvarsha, there are many worshippers of the demigods, the various officials appointed by the Supreme Lord, such as Indra, Chandra, and Surya, all of whom are worshipped differently. The worshippers offer the demigods their oblations, considering the demigods part and parcel of the whole, the Supreme Lord. Therefore, the Supreme Personality of Godhead accepts these offerings and gradually raises the worshippers to the real standard of devotional service by fulfilling their desires and aspirations. Because the Lord is complete, he offers the worshippers the benedictions they desire, even if they worship only part of his transcendental body. Purport. In Bhagavad Gita 9.13, Lord Krishna says, Mahatmanas tumantata daivim praktimas sitaha bhajantyananyamanasug yadvavutadimavinam. O son of Prita, those are not deluded. The great souls are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. Mahatmas, advanced devotees, worship only the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Otherwise, others, however, are also sometimes called Mahatmas. Worship the Lord as ikadrina, patatrina. In other words, they accept the demigods as different parts of Krishna and worship them for various benedictions. Although the devotees of the demigods thus achieve the desired results offered by Krishna, they've been described in Bhagavad Gita as vitajnana, not very intelligent. Krishna does not desire to be worshipped indirectly through the different parts of his body. Krishna wants direct devotional worship. Therefore, a devotee who directly worships Lord Krishna through staunch devotional services recommended in Srimad Bhagavatam, Tivrena Bhakti Yogena Yayeta Purusham Param, is very quickly elevated to the transcendental position. Nevertheless, devotees who worship the demigods, the different parts of the Lord, receive the benedictions they desire because the Lord is the original master of all benedictions. If anyone wants a particular benediction for the Lord, to a word, it's not at all difficult. So the verse begins with the words, Yaisradaya. They have faith. They have faith in the Barisi, in the performance of Vedic ritualistic sacrifices. And it's that faith which binds them to the mercy of the Supreme Lord. Because, after all, the Vedas are apurseya. They are not compiled by man, but they are revealed by the Supreme Lord, and directly emanating from the breath of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, dharmam tu saksat bhagavat pranitam, transcendental knowledge begins with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is just, he reveals that transcendental knowledge, and then it is carried forward in the society of demigods, in the society of human beings, among great sages, and in this way it disseminates all over the universe. Because Krishna has the desire that all living beings return back to the spiritual world. Anadi Bahi Mukha, since time immemorial within the material world, preoccupied playing with the material energy, yayedam daryate jagat, trying to exploit the material energy for one's own enjoyment. As I yesterday came to immigration into the United States, and I got the final stamp of approval in the passport, and I was cleared to go into the United States, the government officer said, "Enjoy." All right, ready to begin our journey through the land of marshmallows. I don't know if you are familiar with a psychological test known the marshmallow test, but the marshmallow test is basically a test which has been around for quite some time, done with children. And what they do is they have on a table a plate with a marshmallow on it. They take the kid in, put him on a seat right in front of the plate, and then they say to the kid, "Yes, you can have it. Oh yes, you can. But if you wait 10 minutes, then you get two. Do you want one or two?" All the kids want two. They get it, right? They want two. Okay, I'll be back, So you can take it any time, but if you wait 10 minutes, I'll be back, you get two. Then there's this candid camera, and the kids along with the plate are just like, some are like descending upon the marshmallow, mouth wide open, and stop at 1 millimeter from the marshmallow. Right? Some lick it. Others push the marshmallow to the other side of the table as far as possible. One kid starts singing on the chair, anything, right? Just keep that mind under control, the marshmallow test. Some kids don't even listen, don't even let the psychologist finish his sentence. You can have it.
Chomp.
Just go straight in. Then what they did, they followed these kids. Because this test was done some 30 years ago, whatever it was. Anyway, they kept records of the people, how they performed in their life. And those who did well in controlling the senses in the marshmallow test, they did much better in life. They did better in education, better in a professional career, and all these things. Interesting. So the entire material world is a giant marshmallow, basically. That is the situation. And somehow or other, we are being tested here. We are being tested. And we can see that so many are controlled by lusty desires, some in an impious way and some in a pious way. Those who worship the demigods are controlled by lusty desires. Kama istaiste vidyanam tapadyante anya devatah. The Prabhupada refers to this word, Rita Jnana, not very intelligent in the purpose. It is coming from the Bhagavad Gita, Kama Istaiste Rita Jnana. Those whose knowledge has been stolen by material desires, whose intelligence is controlled by material desires, what can we do? So then, yes, even then when there's piety, then we worship for some benefit, some temporary benefit. But what is the benefit of any temporary benefit? Well, yeah. There's some benefit. Yeah, I'll take it. But if the end is not a happy ending, then what? It's like, unfortunately, it's not a happy end in the material world. Flap, flap, gasp, gasp, choke, choke, and such kind of things. It's not exactly the happy end. Okay? So, if life is a party, that's great. But if it's a party that doesn't end very nice, then there's a complication. Therefore, those who are more intelligent understand. They are looking at the long-term benefits. And they always act for that purpose. They are thinking. They're not just acting. They're not just, going for the marshmallow. They're thinking. But those who are not thinking straight away without any thought or it's just irresistible, cannot want to go for the long term, but cannot. It's too much, too difficult. Therefore, it requires practice. One cannot do so by being philosophically convinced. We cannot just hear the arguments and say, makes sense. Makes sense. No, it doesn't work that way. Because the senses need to be controlled by regulation. Therefore, abhyasa yogi yukte na chitasananya gamina paramam purusham divyam yadi pratinasintya. Abhyas, regular practice. So that is how it works, that regular practice will anchor us into a behavior where we can give up being a slave of the senses. Otherwise, that's what's basically going on. What can we say? I was like in India somewhere in a room with someone, and that person, what we didn't know but found out later, he had a table with a drawer, and in the drawer he had a piece of cake, nice creamy cake. And then we came in the room and he didn't really want to share the cake, but he wanted to eat the cake also, so he just came when he was about to eat the cake. So, and that was a real disturbance. And then suddenly, like in India sometimes does, the light went out. So he opens the drawer, takes a bite of the cake, but it was full with red ants. And the ants were biting his mouth, so he goes up in the dark. What's going on? Then the light came back on and he was there with his cake and the ants and everything. But can't everyone imagine a moment when they were in such a situation? Just quickly stuffing it in your mouth and someone walks in and you stand there with your cheeks all full, like try to act as if you don't feel caught. Try to just act as if it's perfectly normal, that you just stuffed your face, right? So what can we say? The senses. It is so hard to control the
the senses.
So those who worship the demigods, they are actually controlling the senses, because they engage in sense gratification in a prescribed way, in a pious way. Yes, they want to enjoy the results of their activities, but they do it through piety. There was a certain personality with fuzzy hair who was claiming to be God. And there was a video of his personality in a hot place in India, in a program full of people, and he was perspiring. Then someone came and brought a towel. He took the towel, he just rubbed his face, and then moments later, he had like movements like convulsions. And then this golden egg, lingam, came from his mouth. Plop. Pure gold. Yeah? Theoretically, I can do that too, I think, if I would have the money to buy the golden egg in the first place. The rest, I think that's the toughest part. The other part, to hide it in the towel, I think I could manage. To sort of swallow it and cough it up, I think. That would be a little painful. I'd rather keep it than walk away with it. But anyway. So, what can we say? But then you see the video, and all the people that are watching, when the golden egg comes out, they go, oh! This was like a miracle. This was wonderful. This was, wow. Yeah, so we can see that because of the attachment to gold, because there's such a deep attachment to gold, even a cheap trick, even an obviously cheap trick. Oh, there's so much gold. Ah, gold. So bewildered by the glitter of the material energy. Anyway, it goes so deep. It goes so deep. On the one hand, yes, we want to give up the material world, but on the other hand, it's so difficult. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur described the man who is going up in the foothills of the Himalayas, and he's walking. And it's a long walk up, and he hasn't even come to the mountains yet. Walking. If only I would have a horse. And then, lo and behold, just then, there was a horse standing nearby in the field. Divine arrangement. He found the owner of the horse and said, I have to buy the horse. The owner got a good price for the horse, and it was expensive, but divine, you know. So anyway, he had the horse. Then the horse did not want to move. He tried different things, the horse would not move. And anyway, he checked. Then this foal falls from the horse. He's thinking, wow, my lucky day. Two for the price of one. And then the mother didn't want to move because the little one couldn't walk. So then he's sitting there looking, yeah, well, what to do now? I have this horse, these horses, I can't wait, you know, for the little one to grow up, I have to go. So then he put the little horse on his shoulder, and he was walking with that horse on his shoulders, and the Mary was following nicely. And in this way he went up the mountain. Someone saw him, said, what are you doing? Told the whole story. Then the man said, why don't you just leave these horses behind? He said, oh no, I can't do that. I invested a lot of money in them. So this is the key. The key is that we've invested so much energy into so many things. I mean, I worked hard for this. Really. I just worked so hard for this, and now you're asking me to give it up. Come on. For years I've been wanting this. For years. Been thinking about it. For years. Not really. Hours and hours, if you add it all up. And now the opportunity has come. How can I give it up? Well, this is the difficulty. So that attachment is the difficulty. And it's very hard to give up attachment. Very hard to give up material attachment. One can maybe artificially give it up, but can we really give it up? No. I mean, a certain type of music starts to play, and suddenly some moves also sort of are there. And it's just, it's in us, right? It's just part of us. To do. The only option is to develop attachment to Krishna. That will come naturally. If one, by hearing about Krishna, by serving Krishna, by chanting Krishna's name, attachment to Krishna will develop. And then, of course, after a while, you find yourself in the middle. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta writes a letter, and in that letter he describes Prahlad, and he describes Hiranyakasipu. And he said, Prahlad, he sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead everywhere. And Hiranyakasipu, he doesn't see him anywhere. And then he says, and we are in between. So in between Hiranyakasipu and Prahlad, that is our situation. Both elements are in there in us. On the one side, attracted to Krishna. On the other side, attracted to Maya. And both are very strong. Now what to do? Now what to do? So, that's a good position though, when one has developed that attachment to Krishna. Then it's a matter of just investing. Investing. Just invest more in service, invest more in chanting, invest more in reading the books. Then it's about an effort. Once one has come to the point that attachment to Krishna has developed to a point that one will come back again and again, not once, twice, but again and again, one can no longer stay away somehow or other. In one city in Germany, there used to be a restaurant and a temple, and then at one point they had the last Sunday feast and they closed the temple, and they said, there was some cynical announcement. I was there, and they said, next week there will be no Sunday feast. Sometimes you get such an announcement. They said, next week there will be no Sunday feast because there will be no more temple. And people thought, no, this is some sort of, you know, black humor, right? It's sort of like, it's, you know, some sort of cynical joke, right? It can't be real. But it was. There was no temple. And 6 years later, they opened a small storefront in that city with some prasad. And somehow or other, people found it. And they came staggering into the storefront, as if they came from the desert after a crash landing. And they sort of staggered into that storefront and said, do you have some of that food? What can you do? Once attachment develops, then you cannot stay away. It may be hard to chant 16 rounds, but if you would tell anyone, today you cannot chant one name of Krishna. Not one name, okay? If you just, for a day, you can't do it. You can't. Suddenly that person who said, oh, chanting is so difficult, would find it even more difficult not to chant one day. It's impossible to not chant. Because the attachment develops. So that attachment is our saving grace. And that attachment, so that attachment is not difficult to develop. It is not from how will I develop attachment to Krishna It is impossible. I'm totally not attached to Krishna. It's not true. We are attached to Krishna in so many forms. And that attachment to Krishna will naturally increase. And then the material desires, they will just automatically diminish, automatically become smaller, become insignificant and disappear. So the big question is not how to overcome the material desires. It's not. The big question is how can I somehow or other dedicate myself to devotional service and to chanting without offenses. Because if we chant without committing the offenses, then very quickly there will be results. I'm supposed to stop at 8 on the dot, I guess, and blow the conch. Right? So then I'll just stop and then open up for some questions, otherwise there will be no time for it. So does anyone have a comment? It's a bit of an abrupt end, because I'm not used to this. Okay, I approve.
Since our activity in Krishna consciousness is not just for ourselves, please Krishna.
Yeah.
And since Krishna says no one can hear, no one preaches, it seems like the challenge is in what way can we present or share Krishna consciousness with others?
Yeah.
So that they develop attachment. Because our attachment is one thing we're trying to accomplish, but actually
people are
even averse.
Sure.
Not to speak of detached.
Yeah.
So what do we do?
I like it. It is a point you're opening up that is very important. It is by giving Krishna consciousness, by giving transcendental mercy to others, we will rise above all these material desires. And our attachment to Krishna will grow. It's both. We also want to increase our own love for Krishna. And it's not so easy to just dismiss that. Once in my life, I had a bullet that plowed through me, and I was sitting on my knees, bleeding, and I was just thinking I might just die. And I was thinking of Krishna, but I realized one thing, that I didn't have much love for Krishna. And I was thinking, if I get out of this thing, next time I get in the same position, I want to have more love for Krishna. So that is also there. But granted, giving to others, giving Krishna consciousness to others, that is the key. How to do it? Be yourself. You know, you have your own natural connection with your people, your audience. That's how it works. You have your way, and you have people who are close to you that you can reach out to. In this way, just give those people Krishna consciousness. If you're very great, then you can be a Jagat Guru and give it to all. Then he is that great. Okay, you have a question.
Well, I just had a question about the verse. It seems like Prabhupada in so many instances of Bhagavad Gita says the opposite of this verse. That, right, the worship of the demigods is not as great, of course, as worshiping the root of the tree or Krishna. Whereas here he's saying that, or it's stating that he accepts their worship.
Yeah, it's okay, but it's not. But the fruits are still temporary. So he still says in the purport, this verse looks like it's okay to worship the demigods, but it's still rita jnana for the less intelligent, because the fruits you get are temporary. So what's the point of that? Yes, such people are also within the Vedic culture. They are under the direction of Krishna's words, Vedic culture. So therefore, ultimately Krishna accepts and they ultimately make advancement. But it's a slow boat to China. And China's very far away. So, and there may be all kinds of distractions on the way, so it may take a long time. So it's not advisable at all. You might get stuck on the way. You're worshipping and you may for so many lifetimes again forget, get entangled, and so on. Therefore, better only Krishna. Points to Krishna. Not me, but Krishna.
Right.
And in that way, both we have. We worship Krishna. We also worship Krishna like the pujaris are now thinking, like, okay, we're going to offer this flower to Krishna. Of course, via the guru. But sometimes they offer something to Krishna directly, and that's okay. Spiritual master takes the disciple by the hand, brings him to Krishna. Sufficient. Go for it. Okay, time has come. Thank you so much. Thank you.